Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents a production of the Center for Accounting Transformation. In a new age of watchmen, a team of individuals pooling their talents and abilities come together to bring analysis, reaction, and comedy to the fold. This is their chronicle. This is Accounting Arc.
All right. Exciting that we're all getting together finally, and thank you for joining me for this mission briefing. Really today, since it's the first time we're really talking together on everything, I'd really like to start off with just kind of understanding more of each of our backstories. So can I start off with, help me understand, why did you become an accountant?
I don't think I ever set out to be an accountant. I think it kind of happened by default. And I say that because I have a really weird family history. So I come from a long line of accountants, also hobbits, but that's a whole other aside. But the accounting side of the family, which a few of the hobbits were accountants, but my great-grandfather was an accountant. My grandfather was actually a CPA and worked for some of the big eight back in the day. We've partnered a few. It's a very interesting, long story. My dad has his PhD in accounting and finance, and that's actually when I started studying accounting. So, and also my aunt's an accountant. My uncle is a, EA. It's our family, right? So when I was a kid, I was very outspoken and I talked back a lot and I got in trouble a lot. And, sometimes I got kicked out of class for, arguing with the teachers and being a little hyperactive. So every time I got grounded, my dad made a rule when he started his PhD that I had to get a B or better on the final exam of whatever class he was teaching in accounting at that time. So it didn't matter how long it took me. It could take me 2 hours or it could take me 5 months, as long as I got a B or better on the exam that he was about to give his class or that he just gave his class, I would get ungrounded. So there's no time frame. It was just, learn this material. So I started studying accounting when I was about 12. So I started getting B's or better on all the accounting finals. He taught managerial accounting, financial accounting, cost, everything you could think of from the undergrad perspective. And by the time I got to college, it was easy. So I'm a little lazy, but generally lazy in the right way, where I want to find the most efficient, most innovative ways to do things. And also when I was in college, I'm taking these marketing classes and I'm also slightly colorblind. And so I was struggling with some of these creative things where I'm very creative by nature, but I couldn't put together an assignment in the way they wanted to see it. And I got frustrated. I loved my finance classes. I loved my professors on the economics side. And I hated the job prospects of coming out in the finance world and sitting behind a spreadsheet forever, right? In a back office, not really talking to clients. And on the econ side, you pretty much had to get a PhD to do anything interesting, in my opinion. So that was accounting, right? So I decided to double major in accounting and finance, and I ended up working for Grant Thornton straight out of school. And that was kind of my intro into the CPA world.
Wow. Kind of funny. I kind of had a similar inflection point along my path as well. So I think by the time I was actually beginning to think about what I'll be when I grow up, I always knew business was kind of my path. But I didn't know particularly where exactly that would fall. So I took a bunch, I took economics in high school, love that. It just made sense. I took accounting in high school and fell in love. I mean, we played Monopoly for 2 weeks and had to keep our books by hand. you know, ledger sheets, and, you know, we're making $1 million, like, you know, bills, because 2 weeks of Monopoly where you could actually take loans and pay interest. You know, and at the end of that, to actually see like the finances of playing Monopoly and the revenue and the profit. And I was like, this is badass. And, you know,
it's a great way to teach kids.
Hey, I mean, it was brilliant. And that teacher actually inspired, there were a lot of us from my high school that went on to become accountants and CPAs, to no surprise. And, you know, so when it came time to pick my path, I loved, in fact, I competed in economics, like FBLA competitions, and done really well. So I was like, econ is like, it's just natural. It makes sense. I could go that path, but what the hell do I do with that? Again, like, kind of, unless you like go super deep, like, I'm like, I'm not really, it's not really clear to me. And then in, you know, I think a lot of irony, I was like, accounting, it's very clear my path. I will be this accountant, and I will, you know, so it, to me, it was like, it simplified my decision. And, you know, I was like, boom, I will be an accountant. I will go into public accounting. I will be a partner one day. And that's my destination. So it just, you know, that was the path I chose. And, you know, the, like I said, the irony is I've done so much more than what I thought I was going to do.
It kind of scares me that both of you are so strong in the economics, because I hated economics back then.
That was my favorite.
Even in like college, so like, cool. That was like one of my worst subjects.
Do you want to know how nerdy of an econ like nerd I was? I was so in love with these topics that one of my professors became like a pretty good friend, because I was constantly in his office in office hours. Like, I read this article. Can we debate it? And can we talk about it and what it means and the research they're doing? And randomly, about, I think like 6 or 7 years after I graduated from undergrad, and I hadn't talked to him in person in years, I was on the streets of Dublin walking, and he like somehow was there and turned around and was like, Liz, like, what?
How is that
anyways
possible?
And then we went and, wow, you know, hung out for a weekend talking about other econ stuff. It was great. But yeah, that's how much of an econ nerd I was.
Well, my love actually started with technology first. So I was like, from maybe 7 or 8, I think I started programming on like a Commodore 64 or something like that. So I actually didn't get introduced into accounting until high school. And the funny thing there was, the woman teaching accounting had actually just finished her degree in education, and she was coming back to teach. So like, what, 22, 23 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I was in her accounting class, and I would take it, and accounting just came completely natural. I was like, yep, this makes sense. Debits, credits. And we were ledger paper at that time, so we were doing the ledger paper thing. And it was funny in class, because she would do something on the board, and then she's like, Donnie, is that what you got? Can you take this? So in front of the class, she would actually have me make sure. But we went on to actually, with that same teacher, who was also, I was glad to hear Byron say FBLA. I was both in FBLA and DECA. I also competed in I think it was both FBLA and DECA competitions in school. Mine's actually in the accounting side, though. Nice. But we went on to actually open our own school bookstore, and we did the accounting for the bookstore.
That's cool.
And even though it was a bookstore, basically we sold snacks. And so there was basically, it was a retail operation.
Pencils.
Yep. Pencils, chips, soda, right? So we did that. And I was the accountant. I was the bookkeeper, maybe better term, for the bookstore. And we would do all of our stuff, including filing our state sales tax.
Sales tax.
Yeah, that's so cool. That started early, and I was actually going to major in accounting and do a double degree in accounting and information systems or computer science. And luckily, in the year before my senior year, I had this controller at the company that I was doing my Voc Tech. I forget, they don't call it an internship, but whatever it is at the high school level, I did a summer thing with them, and he was like, no, you need to do a double major, but do it in accounting and information systems rather than
computer science.
Because he was like, you need to understand the way that we use technology in business, not just how to code. And so that's what I ended up doing, is doing that double major in accounting and information systems, and then went to PwC. Like Byron, I thought my path was going to be, I'm eventually going to be a partner and and live that life of the big four for a partner. That quickly got dashed, or maybe not dashed, disenchanted.
Well, and that's ultimately why I went back for my master's in information systems, was because I was in the background automating as much of my job as possible. And I had this kind of feeling like I could learn a whole lot more if I actually had a formal education in technology. And so I went back and got my master's in that, and then, you know, continued automating just slightly more efficiently with better tools.
Cool. And that became part of the foundation of your firm too. So let's I love that all of us are actually firm owners at one point in time, or sometimes what people think of as founders, although we'll talk about that a little differently. So how did your career in accounting and all this other stuff, like for you guys, the love of economics, play into the founding of your own company?
So the office of Grant that I started at was mostly in casino audits. And in Nevada at that time, you had to have, you know, the 2000 audit hours to get your CPA license, and you had to in charge an audit. So you had to get at least to the level to be able to in charge before they would sign off on it. So I actually started an internship in the tax department and worked there for about 6 months before realizing that they wanted to hire me full time. I wasn't graduated yet. I was only in my second year of school. And I, you know, talked to them and said, hey, hire me full time next year, my third year, which is my senior year, because I graduated in 3 years. And I'll be a tax person during the day and an auditor, or vice versa, audit person during the day, tax person at night. And they were like, yeah, sure, why not? And of course, you know, me being me, I just didn't sleep and worked a million hours. So I loved it, honestly. The first couple years, it was, everything was a new challenge. Everything was interesting. I was getting to like go to all these weird casinos and observe all their drops and their surveillance rooms and figure out their count rooms and how they did it and document it all. And, you know, I was fascinated by it, right? I also got to do tax returns for prostitutes, but that's a whole other story. And on the tax side, they had this thing called like the tax shelf, where they would just put the shoebox clients and make all the lower level people, if you had any extra time, just pull a client. And of course, at that point, everything was paper. So you were like copying and scanning and like printing out big paper files and ticking and tying all of them. And I was bored with the ticking and tying and the putting the same number in like 17 different places. And like, there has to be a better way. So I built a little program to do some OCR recognition, throw it into Excel, and then import it into, it was the tax system, was Go system at the time, and then print out my work papers all ticked and tied. And so I started doing this. And of course, like me being me, I manipulated the IT guy a little bit. He may have had a little crush on me. I probably flirted with him too much. And I got an extra computer, you know, to put next to my computer, and was programming and running this program that I built on the side. And it was wildly inefficient. It would take like 15 hours to process, you know, a normal size return, but it did it all for me. And so when I got involved, it was like 2 hours to do what used to be maybe a 15 to 20 hour return. And I was entering my time like correctly, what I actually spent on it, not what I spent on programming, not what I spent behind the scenes like building that, but what I actually spent on the return I put in, because they build that way. Well, the partner one time called me in the office and I thought I was gonna get fired. I was scared out of my mind. And she was like, why are you lying on your time cards? And I was like, I'm not lying. Like, I swear to God, I'm not lying. And she was like, okay, so how are you only taking 20% of the time of anyone else to prep returns? And I was like, I built a computer program to do it for me. And she was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, this was not the answer she expected. She thought I was just lying to make myself look really good. So fast forward a little bit, we ended up implementing that little tool that I built in all the offices, and I moved to the National Tax Process and Tools Group, which ended up not being the right fit for me there at all. And I only worked there about a year and left and went to RSM McGladrey to do what I thought was way more interesting work at that time, which was high level, you know, corporate consolidated returns, interesting tax issues like mergers and acquisitions, state and local. There was a lot of really interesting projects and special projects that they let me get my hands dirty with at RSM and gave me a breadth of experience beyond just basic audit and basic tax prep, right? So I appreciated that experience beyond measure. But one of the things I realized was the people that were really, really good were rewarded with more work. And the people that were really, really inefficient were rewarded with promotions for sitting there over time. And I was like, this is not fair. Like, I have more hours, more experience, more knowledge than people that have been here 10 years when I've only been here 3, because I'm working my butt off and I'm getting exposed to more things and I'm asking for stretch projects. But because, you know, I'm female and young and haven't been in the profession for 10 years, I'm working under wildly inefficient directors and senior managers that are never going to make partners. They can't sell. Meanwhile, all I've been asking is like, teach me to sell, and I can, right? So there were a lot of things broken in the system that I started picking up on, you know, and also, you know, just billable hours in general. Like, I would do work in half the time and then I'd be rewarded with more work. And I'm like, this is stupid. Like, I'm producing more revenue than anyone else on my team, and working more, to be fair. And also, like, there's no benefit to me in any way, shape, or form. So the incentives were wrong. The way it was structured was wrong. I was getting frustrated and pissed off, honestly. And so, you know, I followed a partner who went to work for a local firm to start their Phoenix office. They quickly acquired a Phoenix firm. And then I was put into like merger and acquisition mode. And I was like, this is not what I want to do. So I left right before the AICPA Leadership Academy. And I showed up with basically no job and lots of big ideas. And you mean that room, you guys know, is filled with like really high powered, incredibly successful, driven, ambitious people with like amazing jobs and like things they know they're going to do. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing with my life, guys. Like, I think I'm kind of reasonably smart, but, you know, probably more average than I think. And all right, let's go. So the one thing I took away from that week was the entire profession, everyone in the profession was dealing with the same frustrations, regardless of what level they were and regardless of how they were perpetuating those issues. And that made me realize that this shared experience and dissatisfaction with the old school ways that used to work and don't anymore needed to be addressed. And people weren't addressing it publicly or loudly. And so, you know, I went back to the drawing board. I took a few random side projects, and one of them being a construction company needed a controller. And I said I would temp until they could find someone permanent. And they were a $100 million construction company running out of Excel. And I put them onto Intacct, which Sage acquired after that, and completely automated everything they were doing, their AP process, their AR process, all their closed processes. And I got them from like a 10-person accounting department down to like a 3-person accounting department with amazing technology. And most of the people that were in accounting were also doing other things. So they got to go focus on the other things and the business started growing again. And I realized the power that we could have by meeting technology with that advisory side of it and understanding and implementing in ways that people don't know exist, right? And that's really where HireRock came from. I had originally had a co-founder who was someone I went to college with and re-met at the AICPA Leadership Academy. And we co-founded HireRock with that vision of bridging the gap between tech and accounting and advisory. And then also, you know, changing the way we're doing business, right, for the better. And so that was 10 years ago now, which is crazy.
Awesome. That is awesome. It's so interesting because both of you clearly had a, at least from what it sounds like, a understanding of your technical aptitude with IT. And I was not that at all. I had like kind of messed around with computers growing up, but honestly, like my first interaction with the computer, I literally just formatted the hard drive trying to install a golf game. Like it was terrible. You know, and I remember going into DOS. I'm like, format, that seems like how I could make this work. And, you know, anyway, I did the college thing and realized at that time, I think that's when I discovered I was a bit of a rebel rouser at times. And so I wasn't like an awesome student at all, because I was always trying to buck the system and like work around the system. And but anyway, when I got my first job with a small accounting firm in Annapolis, Maryland, they didn't like, this was 1999. So their website was like a brochure, like a one-page brochure. And I remember talking to my accounting information systems professor, and I was like, their website, like, it doesn't even have pages. And he was like, make that one of the things that you do when you go there, like, help them build a website. And I was like, I can probably figure that out. And so when I got there, like, literally within 3 months, I had actually like built a website for them, just figuring it out on my own. And also, while I was there, they had IT guys who would come and install QuickBooks to everybody's computer and, you know, do the updates to the tax software. And I would like be the shadow following them around the room and like helping them out, because again, like I could do it, you know. And
I have this like image of Byron as a garden gnome just like behind everyone, like, what you doing?
Oh, 100%. Like, what are you doing there? Wait, what happens if you touch that? And, you know, so all of a sudden, like after 5 years of being at this firm, I became the go-to for technology questions, issues, updates, a lot of things. And I'll never forget, the managing partner sat me down and is like, so here's your annual review and here's your billable hours. And here's everybody else's billable hours. Like, this, we got to fix this. And I was kind of like, you know, I'm actually doing all this IT stuff, keeping the infrastructure running, keeping everybody productive. And I'm not really being recognized for that contribution. So I was like, I think it's time to move on. And and really that decision to move on was like, I've gotten too deep into this technology space and I'm supposed to be an accountant. I want to be an auditor. I enjoy this auditing stuff. So I went to a you know, regional CPA firm, about 120 people. And I put my hat on. I was like, I'm going to be an auditor. And the first time we went out into the field and nobody could understand how to network the computers together so we could share our caseware files, and I just plugged everything in and went, all of a sudden I started getting asked to be the IT guy again. And like, they had an IT director who was that classic, like, you know, smoke blowing IT guy who can't fix shit but blames the sun for, you know, computer issues. And I called BS on them. And so literally a year after I started, the managing partner again takes me to lunch and I'm like, oh God. And he goes, you know what? We talked about it at the board meeting last week and we think you're like an okay accountant, but we think you could be a really good IT guy. And what do you think about running our IT department?
Talk about a backhanded compliment.
I know, right? Like, I had to sit there really quick.
You're an okay accountant.
Yes. You know, and this was also, there was a whole story. The IT director at the time was clearly threatened. He actually tried to plant a virus on my computer and get me fired, blaming me for bringing a virus to the network. And it was insane. It was kind of a dream if you thinking back at it. But anyway, I remember, like, you know, really struggling with this idea of like maybe changing paths in my career. And I was like, you know, but maybe this is a way I could blend. There's this calling, this like technology calling that I cannot let go of. And maybe this is a way for me to blend those things. So I agreed. They sent me to Microsoft, like a boot camp I passed 7 exams in 14 days and got Microsoft certified. And, you know, like, which was actually crazy. There were like 30 people in that boot camp, and only 2 of us passed all 7 exams. And most of those people were like IT trained, like, and here I'm just this like scrub. So I was like,
you're like, I push buttons until it works.
And type format.
yeah. Format C:// F. And you know, so anyway, I became the IT director there when we were very early in adopting virtualization and implementing Citrix. We had multiple offices, we consolidated the network, the firm started growing because of, you know, this ability to work from anywhere, anytime. You know, I talked to my business partner. Well, my network engineer at the time became my business partner. And, you know, we were like, this is kind of badass what we've done for this one firm. We kind of know what we're doing. Why don't we do this for many firms? So we approached the firm and we said, we're going to start this business. We'd like you to be our first client. And they fired me shortly thereafter. But I had another firm who I had been whispering into their ear, and we signed up and you know, specialized in outsourced IT for CPA firms, subscription based. We didn't do the traditional path. Like, there was, I already had this like understanding of recurring revenue, and you know, so it was,
and you were an okay accountant, so
okay accountant. Could have been a badass economic guy, but it, you know, So it was, you know, just really kind of strange. I kind of backdoored this like technology competence accidentally in a way.
I feel kind of boring against you guys because I feel like my story is a little more traditional. I liked accounting. I decided to double major. And I mean, I had played around with computers the whole time. I decided to double major in the beginning, because I was always like, I knew I wanted to be someone, a partner in an accounting firm, basically. And of course, Big Four at the time was, you got to be, or actually, I think it was Big Six or Big Eight at the time. It was like, you got to be one of these. So of course I did that, because I'm actually Coopers and Lybrand. When it became PwC, I had already stopped doing auditing because I did both financial and IT audit. But then I had gone on, I actually got pulled into the consulting group, and we were doing knowledge management consulting. It was one of the first times the knowledge management term had been used in a large global consulting engagement, because we were working for the US Navy and looking at business process redesign, or what everyone calls business process improvement now, globally, on actual ships in the Persian Gulf, because the Persian Gulf War was going on. So
that's not boring.
Well, it's still kind of a traditional path. I feel like I'm like, okay, yeah, you go to firm, you do your work, but okay, yeah, so you get to do some cool things. And oh, and like the story everyone always likes to hear is that we actually got to go on the aircraft carrier and stay on the aircraft carrier while they were doing war games in the San Diego Gulf.
That's sick.
So one of the days, walking to go to lunch or dinner, I forget. No, it was lunch. Because I remember we're walking through, so there's the top deck, and then the mid deck is actually a hangar. So we used to have to walk through there to get to the grub. And we're walking, we're talking, and we're kind of going like, okay, watch the missile, don't touch that, like watch the other missile, because you're walking under these planes and you're like dodging it. And I remember seeing the sunlight coming in. I was like, the sun. Oh, I haven't seen that. When was the last time I came through the deck? Wow. So I hadn't seen the sun because I was down in the ship. Because we can go through the deck, which is sort of a shortcut, but you can go the other ways, like going through all the things inside the ship. So did that. But then realized, you know, they and it kind of similar to Liz in a sense, they were like, well, you know, because this is DoD practice, they're like, you got to come and be in Virginia if you want to move up past senior. Because not enough people know what you're... I'm like, look at all this stuff. Like, I'm helping lead one of the global engagements that we have. And I'm like, no, you'd have to come here to get promoted. And so I effectively got passed over for promotion. And I said, well, great, thanks, but I can do this. I don't need you guys. So I ended up actually going to the largest local systems integrator, which is basically a programming shop in Hawaii. Worked with them for a little bit. I was supposed to help them start a consulting practice to do more business process redesign and other stuff. But I ended up finding that the IT side is so much in disarray and they don't have enough structure to what they do. It was driving me crazy. And so I said, I need to get out of this. So I didn't even last a year. I went back to one of my original clients as well. So kind of similar to Byron, went back to one of my original clients and was like, hey, I think I'm going to leave them. If I go on my own, would you come and, you know, work with me? And they just happened to come back and say, we were just about to outsource a whole bunch of stuff to you. Like, and I said, well, if I leave them, will you still do it? And they said, yes. And so that was kind of the founding of my firm 22 years ago. And now we went through kind of that whole thing of, okay, now we're this IT consultant because that's way more sexy than accounting, right? Mm-hmm. But we had registered as a CPA firm because I wanted to be able to attract others to work with me and I wanted their experience to count towards them getting a CPA. And we kind of evolved for a while. But I don't think I could do what I was doing, which was really looking at these mid-market companies, looking at their controls, looking at the way data flowed through their different systems, because we did a lot of application development work without the background that I had, because I had seen the financial audit side. I knew what the auditors were looking for. I had seen the IT side because I used to do IT audit. I knew what they were looking for. And so we would help these companies not just like improve their controls, but actually do the improvements in a way and created our work product in a way where we knew it would immediately pass the audit. So we started bringing this different value out, and now it's evolved to where we're looking at full business transformations. And now we bring governance, risk management, the entire integrated risk management perspective and things like ESG into this broader perspective. So totally accounting connected, but we don't do traditional accounting anymore.
That's awesome. See, that's not boring at all. That's fascinating. So I have a question. Early career, what's a funny story both of you can remember of like some either blooper like thing you did accidentally that was not okay, but funny, or something someone else did?
The one that immediately comes to mind where I kind of go dull is, so I was moving from the local office to the Washington consulting practice. And this is me, I think I'm 2 years in, so I'm probably 24. And part of what had happened in this dynamic was the local office was like, we're going to take you off the audits because this Washington consulting practice wants some local people to work on this. But, you know, we'll still be your home office and just be careful because, and then I was friends with the consulting side of that one. And they were like, yeah, we bid on that. And they chose the global because we brought up the opportunity and they stole the opportunity from us because we should have this locally. And so when I went to actually interviewed with the Washington consulting practice leader, and he's like, okay, yeah, we'd really like to have this. And I said, well, you know, I have one condition on me coming onto this team. And it's that basically I told him, you cannot screw over the local office anymore. Later on, the HR from the local office came and she said, I need to talk to you about something.
Oops.
Because you can't go making these statements and all this kind of stuff. I was like, okay, but that's the situation, right?
Oops. Right.
That was my introduction to business politics.
No doubt. Yeah, my probably biggest early career blooper was taking the CPA exam. Of course, you know, in those days, only available twice a year, paper-based, 2 full days of testing. I'd taken it the first time. I was actually the last class in Maryland to graduate at 120 and be able to qualify for the CPA. So I took it that November just to be grandfathered in. So I took the 120, I got grandfathered in. I failed every section. I didn't even study at all. I also had a newborn child at home, starting a new career, you know, a lot of stuff going on. So the second time, the following May, would be my first time, like really hunkering down, studying. And I had to drive about 45 minutes to the Timonium State Fairgrounds. They have the cow building that you take the exam in. And I had a 68 Mustang and I was like humming, like trying to get there.
You're so cool.
I've missed that car. But the prior year, like people were walking in late for the exam. Like people, it was like so casual, whatever. I cut it a little close and I was 2 minutes late to the exam. And I get there and there's two very large police officers at the front door, arms crossed. And they're like, you can't go in. And I was like, no, I'm taking the CPA exam. It's right behind those doors. And they're like, nope, you cannot go in. They're not allowing any late entrances here. And at that point, I had to wait 6 more months to take the exam. I was pretty brutal.
Yeah, it's not a good one. No. It's one of those cringe moments. Like, oops.
Oh yeah, yeah. Nobody was very impressed at the time. My bosses or my future wife. Future ex-wife.
That's so typical Byron, though, just having known you for so long. Uh-huh.
I did do a donut right in front of the cops after I left because I was like, they're not gonna chase me. I was not pleased. I was like, everybody will hear me. Yes.
Yeah, no, that's really funny.
And you,
Liz.
I mean, I had a lot of like actual career bloopers, but I think the funniest thing that happened when I just turned 20. So I started working at Grant Thornton at 19 as an internship. I just turned 20 and there was this manager on the audit side. His name was Dan Flowers. He's still an accountant, fantastic human, hysterical. He was always pranking people, like little pranks, you know, like if you left your computer unlocked, he would like send an email, be like, hey, I'm in the bathroom for 5 hours or, you know, stupid stuff like that, where people would just be like, oh yeah, okay, we know that's not actually her, right? And so everyone on the audit team with him was like, how do we get him back? And I was like, guys, I got this. Like, I'm a gold star pranker, right? And so I bought this thing on the internet. It was like a little microchip that just beeped randomly in different ways at different intervals, at different like sounds, right? And it was like tiny, tiny, tiny. And I went into his office and I like glued it to the bottom of his phone and just turned it on and left, right? So I'm like, that thing would drive me up a wall. So, you know, auditors are in and out of the office, our client sites, whatever. So like a week goes by and he hasn't like noticed yet because he's only been in the office for a little bit of time. And of course, you know, him being him, he was social. So he's in the conference room. He's like out in the bullpen, right? He's not actually sitting in his office. And so I'm like, oh, maybe it broke. So I was kind of getting a little nervous that my prank wasn't going to go off. And then this one day I come into the office and his office is destroyed. Like every book on the bookshelf is on the floor. Every file is on the floor. There's nothing in the desk. Like everything was cleared out. And I was like, I may have gone a little too far. And so I like go back to my desk and I'm like, I'm not going to say anything. And then he like comes out and he's like, guys, I can't find it. Like, I don't know what the heck this is. Like all I hear is this beeping and I've cleared everything out of my office. And like, he's like going nuts. Right. And he's like pissed. And I'm sitting there like, okay, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. I'm like, I got to stick to the prank. Right. Like I have everyone else on the audit team counting on me for this prank. Like, I'm not going to say anything. So like an hour goes by of him going nuts. And then he comes out and he's like, I found it. They tapped my phone. And he like has a little microchip that's on his phone. He's like, I don't know who's tapping my phone. Like, do you think it's corporate espionage? Do you think it's like one of our audit clients? Like, and he's like going nuts, like freaking out about this. And so then he's like calling IT. Then he's calling like the managing director of the office. And then he's calling like the national IT director. And he's like, why are they tapping my phone? Right. And he's freaking out. And so finally I like went into his office and he was like dialing some other IT person. I like hung up the phone and he was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I like couldn't get it out. And he's like looking at me and I'm like in full like panic mode. And he was like, oh my God, are you okay? Like, what's going on? And I was like, that chip was a joke. Like it's not real. Like I bought it on the internet.
Nobody's tapping your phone,
right? And this was like probably 4 hours of him freaking out. And then, of course, you know, everyone in the office had a lot of like congratulations to give me for like a prank going well. And he was like, I swear to God, like this kid, like what am I going to do with her? But yeah, that was a little rough. Fantastic. That came up on my review that year as a disruption to
a little bit disruptive to productivity.
Yeah, and they were like, you shouldn't do that stuff at work. I'm like, okay,
but it was you're funny. Right.
Like, I get it. I'm a child. Yeah, I have a few other good ones. Like the time I tried to install a virus on one person's computer where like you move a screen and the cockroaches would come out, and ended up installing it on everyone's computer because I'm an idiot. Like another time I like totally hacked RSM's like major database. It was a thing, but anyways.
We got to do an episode of just those types.
Yeah,
of
don't
things,
let me right? get bored.
We could go That's all day. I've got yeah, you just unlocked a whole bunch of memories. I was like, oh, in this.
Well,
spoiler.
Let me transition us into our next one, and disruption is a good transition because as we think about disruption and the whole startup world and the concept of a founder, that's usually what a lot of these founders are coming in to do. Is they're coming in because they're like, we're going to disrupt whatever it is they're doing, like Airbnb disrupting the lodging industry, right? So there's this view of founders that everyone has that are running these startups, they're getting these VC monies, they're building these revolutionary products. But as we've each told our stories, we're each founders. But I think the accounting founder maybe is a little different. And each of us is also seen as leaders nationally, internationally in our profession as well. So maybe can we redefine or maybe define what it means to be an accounting founder, and how does this differentiate us from maybe the startup world that everyone seems to be enamored with right now?
That's a hard question. So Byron's got this.
Go Byron.
You know, it is a hard question. You know, I think there's a few things that differentiate it. One is I think probably through all of our stories, we have a shared interest in owning our own destiny. I feel like so many accountants kind of like plant their flag based on this idea of like, I can do it different. And I want to own my destiny in how I'm going to do that. And, you know, some of these like glorified VC founders, you know, I actually think there's like two populations of those, because I do believe, like, if you look at some of the stories of like Spotify and Uber and, you know, some of these great Airbnb stories, those people really had like this calling of wanting to do something big and large. And like, it was like this force that they could not like stop. They just had to pursue it. And then there's this other population of like, I hate to call them wannabes, but they're just like, I really have no passion or interest in anything. I just want to be a VC founder. And so they're like this hammer looking for a nail, and they're just going to hit whatever nail somebody else hasn't hit. And so I think there's like different drivers to all of those different founders. And I also think there's a degree of we are building value in the organizations that we've founded. I mean, I've you know, departed from mine, but you know, the idea was we were building value in the idea of a healthy organization that would, you know, bring all of this value to our constituents, whether it's our team members, our clients, and those types of things. In the VC space, value is actually very different than that. Value is a bit of a shell in a sense. And so I think that changes a lot of the approach from an accounting mindset to just kind of this, like, I don't know, super founder mindset, if you will.
I'm totally with you on that. My experience, and I've only worked with three or four of these kind of VC funded firm companies, is they are so focused on just acquisition and acquiring and
sales and marketing
revenue that they don't look at whether it's sustainable, and they don't look at the impact on their people within the organization. And I'll even go as far to say sometimes, and I think the whole call on the AI thing right now, sometimes they're even unethical in the way that they're looking and trying to do something. I think our accounting type of founders are very different. And I think, Byron, you said a lot of it very well, because it's especially when they're founded in the accounting side, the foundation of our profession really being ethics and values and being the one that helps people really make that better decision, make sense of all this change that's going on in the world, making sense, simplicity out of the complexity of regulation and compliance. I think that's such an important part of what we do. We start our firms because we want to help people, not necessarily because of the profit or this image. And like you said, the ego of, well, I want to be a founder. It's no, I want to help people. But I want to be able to help people in the way that I do it, with my unique talents, with my unique skills. And maybe I have a team with me as well.
Yeah.
Liz, I saw you come off mute. So what's your
comment?
You work with a lot.
I do. I work with a lot of founders. And I think, you know, I work with a lot of tech founders as well. And I've been through fundraising cycles, you know, as acting CFO of many different businesses. And there's a requirement when you take someone else's money, particularly when you're taking VC money and being that kind of founder, and that you have to meet certain goals. Yeah. You have to get to the valuations that they require. And unfortunately, most of the time, getting those valuations requires getting more money and fundraising in a continuous cycle. And the way that it works is not a fun life, right? Like, it's stressful. It's continuous. You never know if you're going to make it. And if you don't hit the targets, you don't get the next round of funding, your company goes belly up and you move on to the next thing. And it's not like it's not the same as what accountants start businesses for, right? Like, I think you hit the nail on the head, Donnie, in that we start businesses to help, because we're in a professional service business. So all of us have that in us to want to help and to do good in this world and to find ways to assist in that and to service people. It's a human capital business, right? And you know, like for me personally, I started the company because I wanted to provide a safe haven for the weirdos and the outcasts that thought a little bit different, right? Like the ones that can change the world by changing, you know, the life of one person or the trajectory of one business, or you know, building a culture that's not corporate, stuffy, pyramid, climb the ladder, do the things. Like, there's a place for someone in our firm that has no sales skills, and there's a place for someone that has no technical skills, right? And finding passions and finding where people are actually really excellent, you know, and pushing them in those directions is what makes a good, solid, productive team. And the traditional model was aimed towards maximized profits for the hierarchy, right? And that's not,
right.
I mean, it's how the partnership agreements work. It's not how the people work inside the firms. And that's the part that's like really different and really hard, because there's a dichotomy happening in traditional public accounting. And so founding for me was more, how do we create a place where people can have all of it, right? How do you build it all? I was really close with my grandfather, who was a CPA, who did the traditional trajectory firm life, right? And, you know, I called him and he owned his own practice. He worked for big, big firms, like international firms. He did all the things, right? And one day I called him, I was really upset with, you know, the way things were happening. I wasn't able to protect a team member that I was managing at one of the big firms. And it was really rough. And he was like, look, Liz, like, you get to have the influence that you take. Like, you have to walk into that room and own the influence that you can have and understand you can't change the world as one person, but you can change the life of one person. And just like focus on the individuals that you can influence and the humans that you have power over, and building a place where I get choked up. So my grandfather recently passed and he was like my biggest mentor in this world. But, you know, you can change the culture in your direct influence, and you can own that influence. And that's why I founded the firm, was truly to build the influence to change the lives of our team members and the lives of our clients, because it's not often that you can find an accounting firm where people are taken care of because they're humans for no other reason other than they're human.
Yep.
Yep. Oh my God, Liz. Yeah. I love you so much, because I've known you for so long, and this is the first time I've heard that story. And I'm doing a lot of the same in my firm. In fact, one of the manager level people that joined us, she said, we're like the island of misfit toys, because we're the people that didn't fit in all the other organizations, but created a home for them in our firm. And similar to your grandfather, is actually my aunt. I had an aunt that, she's still alive. She actually, when I was going through a really hard time in my firm, where I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. Like, managing all these people is just seriously a pain in the butt. And you guys have all dealt with HR issues. Like, this is do I really want to do this? I mean, my firm we were running out of money. Clients were like, we were failing on some of the client projects. We were behind on stuff. There was internal like conflict and stuff going on. And my aunt sat me down and she said, you need to think about the way you make this decision is you need to think about the impact that you want to have. If it's just you, you can impact so many people. If you can impact other people who then impact other people who then impact other people, then you can really have this wave of change that actually occurs. And that's how you can have a much bigger impact. But what do you want to have? Because maybe you don't want to have this world-changing impact. Maybe you want to have this individual impact. And that every time I feel challenged in my firm, I always come back to that. It's part of the reason why we work with other accounting firms to help them improve what they're doing. Because we know by improving what they're doing, they're then able to impact that many more clients, whether they're individuals, families, other businesses. And if we're consulting with other businesses, which we work a lot direct with clients, we know that we're driving improvements in those business for the employees in that business and for the customers in that business. So we kind of look at that as our influence, or the way that we help influence change or empower change to then help improve the world as well.
Awesome. Both are very inspiring. It's awesome.
Thanks.
I just think about, man, if somebody had given me, call it just $10 million to start my business, man, the way in which I'm sure the three of us would have deployed in a cash injection like that at the beginning to accelerate that impact would probably be very different than the way the traditional responsibilities to a VC who is demanding a return and also asking you to spend that money as quickly as possible. So they have to give you more so they can own more of your business is very different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe 10 years in, I'm almost responsible enough to deploy that capital in the best way possible. But I think it's taken me this long to get to the point where I understand what levers to pull in what direction to even have the right influence.
That's very fair.
I'm with you on that, Liz. I'm 20 years in now, and actually only now do I really feel like that, because that's why we're going through huge growth now. And I'm like, okay, I'm comfortable with this. Cause I kept our firm at, after we had kind of grown and then we shrank back down intentionally. Cause I was like, I'm not dealing with this volume of stuff. And we've stayed like in between the 9 and 12 people for like a good 10, another 10 years.
Yeah.
And now I'm at the point where, okay, I've figured out, I think, how we can scale our culture, our belief, our values, and create this better environment. So now we're actually thinking about, hey, maybe we should go and get some funding. But I want to come back to one of Byron's comments, which is having the $10 million. One of the things that I really like about our profession is you don't have to have $10 million to start your own firm, to create the impact. Because, and Byron, I think actually you're probably a good example where even with only good accounting skills, you were able to start your own business.
Okay.
Not accounting.
Okay.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Just okay. Accounting skills. You could start your own business. And you said you knew how to actually run it. You were already looking at things. You understood revenue models, right? So even if someone is not thinking about whether it's their own accounting firm or it's another business, yeah, accounting is that foundation. And a lot of, when I say that, a lot of people go, oh yeah, yeah, because money is the son of business. But I don't think a lot of people realize that accounting is more than just money. We look at risk, we look at controls, we look at the way people make decisions, we analyze trends, which is maybe comes back to some of the economics love that you guys have, right? Like we're looking at the whole picture of what an organization is doing.
And able to track it and hold people accountable is the other side. Like accounting and accountability are from the same root word for a reason.
Yeah. And actually, as we talk about these other areas, that is also why I get excited when we talk about this ESG reporting or environmental, social, and governance reporting, because that is providing the standards and frameworks around all of these other non-dollars or non-financial areas to really say, these are the best ways to do things, or these are the ways to measure your human capital impact, your environmental impact, to quantify your risk and the way that your organization takes risks. Let's really quick, if you were talking to another founder, what's your advice, accounting founder, what's your quick word of advice to them?
You have to trust yourself. If you are making decisions for other people, you're going to end up down a path that eventually you're going to look back and be like, how'd I end up here? You have to have a strong conviction to your beliefs and, follow the path that you believe to be the right path.
I have so many things that it's hard to pick one. My brain just went into like the tree spiral. I think, someone who's considering founding in accounting, I would ask kind of the questions of why, like what's your why, right? How do you define this? Like, what is the impact you're trying to have? What's the influence? Similar to your aunt, had that conversation with you, Donnie. And what are your expectations here? Because if you set clear intentions, you know your why, you really understand what you're doing and how you're going to do it, you're a lot more likely to succeed at it, right? And even like, how do you measure that? And I've met a lot of founders that kind of just start by default and then later on realize this isn't what they wanted. They don't have a why. Yep. They don't really have a how. They're just kind of fell into it and this is what happened and it wasn't intentional. And that I think is a difficult place to be. So I would say set your intention and understand what you're doing and really consider it fully before doing it. And know it's going to be more work than you ever think it could.
I love that. I love that. In fact, that's the exercise I just told Byron that he has to go through since he's trying to figure out what he's going to do next.
It's true. I would just qualify that one thing. I think people overcomplicate that sometimes in like finding their why or intention. Like they believe it has to be this like incredibly like deep, passionate, insightful thing. And like sometimes it could be, I just want to make a lot of money. And if that's your why, you're going to make decisions that are going to be focused on that. So you don't have to go through, you know, a terrible, painful process to come up with this like amazing, insane motivational why. It just really needs to be like, what do you hope to get out of this?
Yeah. Well, and you just hit like a really, really important thing, which is making decisions, right? So as you're building a business or as you're even making decisions around startup, right? Like you have to be doing it intentionally. You can't just make whatever gut instinct decision you think is right if it doesn't align with your goals or your values. And so you kind of have to understand those things beforehand to really have the impact that you're planning to have. Otherwise, you're going to end up scattered and small.
And I'm gonna close with that and my word of advice, which is to take the risk to start. I know as generally as accountants, we feel like, oh, I gotta analyze the whole thing. It is so easy to start your own firm today. Like you can be up and running literally within a day and $1,000, maybe $2,000 in your pocket. Like this is not a huge investment to really get stuff started. So with that, we're going to encourage everyone, get that started, figure out your why, and we'll hope to see you again on another episode of our podcast. Thanks for everyone for joining us. Thank you, Liz and Byron, for sharing your stories.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. Yeah.
So much fun.
The Center for Accounting Transformation provides business professionals with a network for utilizing innovations that are ready for adoption, the training and resources necessary to apply those innovations, and an opportunity to engage the talent and community needed to further the pursuit of innovative accounting practices that drive responsible and mindful business performance. Find out more at our website, www.improvetheworld.net. And if you're interested in sharing your own transformation stories, please contact us there.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of cpatrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to cpatrendlines.com.